26th. This is Spingola Speaks, and this is Deanna Spingola. I'm coming to you from the suburbs of Chicago, a city known for its corruption. Thanks for joining me today, and thanks for listening to RBN. To see the guest schedule for this program, go to Spingola.com, click on the radio schedule button, choose the year and month, and you will see a list of the guests together with links to their websites. I also have some new links on the front page. If you scroll down, you will see that I have Lindsay, who is narrating the protocols. He will be adding another narration, but that button under the protocol button is not active yet. Alrighty, if you have questions or comments today during the program, email spingola1@yahoo.com. My regular email is deanna@spingola.com. And, of course, we will take calls in the second hour at 800-313-9443. RBN is conducting a pledge drive, and you can help RBN by contributing to that pledge drive. Just call 800-724-2719. You may also support RBN by purchasing products from the RBN website, including business cards and bumper stickers and other very nice items. You may also subscribe to the archives at a higher rate than the usual, $1.33 per month, or purchase some advertising if you have a product or service that you would like to sell. You can do these things by going to republicbroadcasting.org or by calling 800-724-2719. Jewish gangsters were prominent in the underworld and in the distribution of illegal alcohol and in organized crime. They operated in large cities like Cleveland, Detroit, Minneapolis, Newark, New York City, Chicago, and Philadelphia. Meyer Lansky, whose family emigrated from Poland in 1911, and Benjamin Bugsy Siegel headed the violent Bug and Meyer mob, and Abe Bernstein directed the Purple Gang. Others who grew rich during Prohibition included Dutch Schultz, Morris Dalitz, Charles Solomon, Abner Zvilman. By 1931, Charles Lucky Luciano, whose real name was Salvatore Luciano, eliminated the Sicilian mafia bosses, and the Jewish gangsters seized control of the New York mafia. Luciano worked with Lansky and Siegel. Dalitz, the crime family, or the crime boss of Cleveland, had gambling interests, labor racketeering, and money laundering operations in Hollywood, Las Vegas, and Miami. On November 11, 1931, the gangsters held a conference at New York's Franconia Hotel. Jacob Shapiro, Louis Buckalter, Joseph Strutcher, Hyman Holtz, Louis Kravitz, Harry Teitelbaum, Philip Kovalik, and Harry Greenberg attended the meeting during which the Yids and the Dagos would collaborate in what the press called the National Crime Syndicate. Lansky developed gambling interest in Cuba, Florida, New Orleans, and Las Vegas. Buckalter led Murder Incorporated, the syndicate's organization of hitmen. Alrighty. In conjunction with this, my guest today is Carl Rattle. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Welcome to the program, Carl.
Thank you for having me again, Deanna.
Well, I thought since you were going to be talking about Cuba, I would just give a little bit of background about some of the things that did occur in Cuba and, all over the country, actually.
Yes, it's quite true. I mean, Cuba's wealth has historically been based upon, sugarcane. And it tried to diversify out into the sort of pleasure industry and casinos and all that in the 1930s, 40s, and 50s. And,
Carl,
of course, as you mentioned, a lot of them were Jews. Yep.
Carl, could you hang on to that thought? We do have to take a quick 3-minute break, and then we'll be right back.
Thank you. Hey, meat eaters, the freeze-dry guy wants to know, does your emergency food supply meet the standards for survival? Then get the 144-day meat variety unit from the freeze-dry guy. Our meat units utilize only quality Mountain House freeze-dried cooked ground chicken and ground beef, the undisputed choice for great taste and highest nutrition. The freeze-dry guy's 144-day meat variety unit includes six number 10 cans of the very best freeze-dried animal protein for power you'll need when the going gets tough. Every Meat Eater's 144-day meat variety unit comes with a free medical kit and always free shipping to the lower 48. Need more than 144 days? See our one-year-plus Meat Eater's units at freezedryguy.com. And hey, the Freeze Dry Guy still has LRP rations, but they're going fast. Don't wait until tomorrow. Call now, 866-404-3663. That's 866-404-3663. Or go to freezedryguy.com and meet the standards for survival.
If you are a vendor dealer who sells any equipment or service that costs more than $15,000, we can help you make the sale through our low-cost lease finance programs. We are good in all 50 states, including Canada, and we have a very wide credit window. Call Bob New today at 888-639-2621 and let us explain in more detail how we can help you make more sales. Call Bob New today, 888-639-2621.
Chlorine, fluoride, pathogens, and more are in the water you drink day to day. Do you want the ability to remove and reduce those harmful things in the water you drink? You can. How? With a Berkey water filter. A complete standalone gravity filter system that requires no electricity and no plumbing. Use for emergencies or for every day. Berkey systems come in 7 different sizes. Where can you get one? From GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com. With the purchase of each system, you get 50% off accessories, such as fluoride filters, water level spigot, and sport bottles. Plus, free shipping on all orders over $25. For a limited time, get 5% off all ceramic systems when you use coupon code RBN. Call GetBerkey at 855-GetBerkey. That's 855-438-2375. Or visit GetBerkey.com. That's GetBerkey.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there's only one, Pure Effect Ultra. It features advanced anti-radiation technology and is constantly rated 5 stars as the number one system for reduction of fluoride, drug and chemtrail residues, heavy metals, and more. It raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and provides virtually instant clean water on demand, all while using no electricity. Want to learn more? Visit PureEffectFilters.com. That's PureEffectFilters.com.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Radl, R-A-D-L. He is the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And, okay. Please continue. We're talking about the Jewish role in, in a lot of crime.
Yes, a lot of crime. Insofar as in building this industry in Cuba, this sort of the gambling industry, I should say, an awful lot of the Jewish gangsters like Meyer Lansky and so forth came there and they started setting up shop there pretty much in that period. That sort of fed a sort of culture of political corruption in Cuba, to the extent where Meyer Lansky's and Jewish gangsters, former hitmen in Cuba, were running a death squad against the communists, of all things. The point where you had people disappearing off the streets. What was it, in 1958, for example, you had 164 political assassinations, 300 more attempted ones in the streets. By these very death squad members that were basically gangsters who had been trained in their sort of methods by Jews. And it's worth bearing in mind at this time that Cuba was being ruled by effectively a mulatto sergeant called Enrico Batista. He was basically a tool of U.S. interests to some degree. but more pointedly of the commercial interests that were running Cuba at that time, of which many of them were Jewish. Sort of that's the kind of background to what happens between 1957 and 1959 with the communist revolution of Fidel Castro. You don't have many Jews in Cuba to give some kind of context. You're only talking a few thousand, if that, individuals over the entire course of Cuban history. At any one time, you're talking a few hundred, at most, Jewish individuals on Cuba. But in spite of that, they represented at least about 5 to 10% of the elite of the elite in Cuba. The people who owned the plantations, people who owned the casinos, hoteliers, you name it, they were in it. So it's quite interesting that they were some of the biggest supporters of Castro. When Castro was in his early phase, when he was in the Cielo Maestra in 1957-1958, he had an awful lot of Jewish backing from his urban cadres. So his urban cadres were the ones who fought with the death squads, more or less, in the cities like Havana. And some of that activity was supported by Jewish families. A good example is the De Jong family, whose children went to school with Castro, and all three of them became radical communists along with Castro. In fact, two of them later emigrated to the US and set up property businesses in Florida, of all places. And to such extent, you have that kind of collaboration and help going on. But interestingly, in 1961, a lot of the Jews upped and left. There doesn't appear to have been a particular reason why, other than that was the time that Castro was beginning to show he was a bit more than just your average, in quotes, reformer. It's probably the best thing to go into it via Castro himself, is that one of the more interesting things about Castro that people don't tend to know is that there is a massive argument as to whether Castro is himself Jewish. The reason it's an argument per se is because we don't have very good evidence for him not being Jewish, but we have some evidence that he was Jewish. And the principal piece of evidence we have is that we have three different witnesses who went to school with Castro in Dolores, which was one of the top schools of Cuba, run by Jesuits, who said that in 1941, at the height of the fighting in Operation Barbarossa, Castro declared before an awful lot of people in the school that he was very supportive of the fascists, but he could not support fascism or national socialism because of his opposition to the Jews, and that he himself was a Jew. He specifically said that he was a Sephardic Jew, and that his grandmother had been a Sephardic Jewess. Now, there has been an attempt, for example, by Tad Sulzik in his biography of Castro to say that Jew in Cuba meant bastard. It was an insult for bastard. However, a part of the problem with that is that the term Jew could also mean foreigner. For example, it was using the term of Palestinian, someone who was foreign, someone who was Jewish, and coming in, taking over Cuba. Now, it kind of contradicts itself, because if one is true, then one cannot be true, and if one is true, then the other cannot be true. So you get a situation where you either believe it or you don't. However, as I said, we have that bit of testimony from people who are not in themselves anti-Jewish but don't see the import of it, but nevertheless have mentioned it on three separate occasions. We also have the fact that we don't know very much about Castro's, in quotes, Spanish background, because his father, Angel Castro, was a direct immigrant from Spain, and Castro has, of course, kept his background very, very secret for the entire time he has been in rule. In fact, he has been at pains to force the Spanish government at times to not reveal information about his ancestry, which is kind of strange given the fact that there is very little, there should be very, very little to look at if we weren't to find something like he was a Sephardic Jew. Another interesting point is his mother. And for those of you who are unaware, Fidel Castro was a bastard. His mother was Nina Ruz, as in literally a bastard.
Right.
rather than just being a bastard. as in his mother and father weren't married. His mother has been claimed to be Cuban. In fact, she was a Spanish immigrant of three generations standing, whose family hadn't married into the local Cuban population. So the idea that Castro could himself have been Jewish is quite plausible, because there is no reason between heaven and earth he should have said, I am a Sephardic Jew in 1941, and also that it was his grandmother. The reason I bring up both those points again is that the Sephardim is literally the Cephalad, the splinter group of the Jews. It's the old term of the Spanish Jews, if you like, from the Iberian Peninsula. And a lot of the Cuban Jews were of course Sephardim. However, the fact he mentions it suggests that he knows quite a lot about it, which is kind of odd for someone who's a communist and is not, shall we say, the most au fait with his origins. It shouldn't really matter to him. However, when we get into the mother or grandmother side of things, it indicates that Castro knows how Judaism works and how Jewishness is assigned in Halakha, because it is assigned on the mother's side unless the father is a member of a Kohanim or a Levite. Now, obviously there are not many Kohanim or Levites around. So it's generally a maternal lineage. And the fact that he's saying he is Jewish by his grandmother, and therefore his mother, suggests that he himself considered himself Jewish. We have also an interesting tie-in for those people who are interested in Freemasonry, in that after Castro's attack on the Moncada Barracks, which is his first ever attempted revolt against the Cuban government, he was aided by his father's friends, and his father's friends just so happened to be Freemasons. And we have it, it's mentioned in several biographies that his father actually invoked Freemasonic friends specifically, because they would cooperate with each other to make sure that Castro wasn't sort of lined up in front of a wall and shot by Batista's death squads, as happened to basically the rest of the people who attacked Moncada Barracks with him in 1955 or 54.
Well, that is very interesting, because certainly the Freemasons do stand up for each other. They protect each other, and that would certainly stand to reason that he would have escaped Batista's death squads if he had that sort of a connection. Wow, that is very interesting.
I mean, it's just the fact that it isn't even debated that that's what happened. But yet we still hear the claims that, oh yes, Freemasons is not a league, is not in the Freemasons' code to help each other. Yet we have evidences like that of them actually helping each other. And
yes.
It's crazy. You get some of the claims that you get that people come out with to try and debunk you.
Right.
It's quite amazing at times.
We do have to take a break just momentarily, but something else that's kind of interesting is that back a couple of years ago in the Jewish newspaper Haaretz, mm-hmm. Fidel Castro told Ahmadinejad to stop denying the Holocaust. So he was really standing up for the Jewish interests there. And I find that's kind of interesting. Alrighty, We do need to take a break. We will be back in 3 minutes, so stay tuned.
Heart-related health problems affect millions of people each year. Maybe you're one of the many who suffer from issues related to angina pain, high blood pressure, congestive heart failure, unbalanced cholesterol, irregular heartbeat, or clogged arteries. There is a solution that doesn't involve expensive prescription drugs that only mask the problem and leave you with horrible side effects. If you are ready to live your life free of sickness, pain, and fear, live your life with increased vitality, energy, and youthfulness, and experience your body healing itself, then you're ready for Heart and Body Extract from Healthy Hearts Club. Here is what one satisfied customer had to say about Heart and Body Extract regarding his angina pain.
I haven't had an angina pain since I've been on it. The Heart Body Extract is just so great. I thank God that I was led to this product that's doing so much for me and that can do so much for other people.
Call to order your 2-month supply of Heart and Body Extract today. Call 1-866-295-5305 or go to hbextract.com.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offeror can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
The Get Prepared Expo is coming. Practical advice, affordable solutions. Get Prepared Expo with KWTO's Vincent Finelli. Ozark Empire Fairgrounds, Springfield, Missouri. Over 125 seminars and exhibits. The biggest and best preparedness expo in the USA. Saturday and Sunday, April 28th and 29th. Discount $8 passes and $15 weekend passes available now at GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com. Prepare and survive right now at GetPreparedExpo.com. Mothers, fathers, grandmothers, and grandfathers all over the world are worried. World-renowned experts predict economic collapse and war. The time to prepare is now. Don't miss the Get Prepared Expo with KWTO's Vincent Finelli. Ozark Empire Fairgrounds, Springfield, Missouri. Saturday and Sunday, April 28th and 29th. The biggest and best preparedness expo in the USA. Discount $8 passes and $15 weekend passes available now at GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com. GetPreparedExpo.com.
Welcome back. Excuse me. Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle, the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. And he does claim that he is a Murano Jew, you know, according to some claims. And another name is De Castro, which is found in the Jewish Encyclopedia. Which has a long, lengthy list of people by that name who are, in fact, Jewish.
Yes, that's very, very true. As I said, we don't know for sure that Castro is Jewish, but there's a very good argument that, in fact, he was. And it's interesting to note that in the late 1950s and the early 1960s, there were a lot of people who were pretty much arguing this in anti-communist circles. However, the reason that argument more or less died out is because Castro just sort of cut away any access to information about himself to the point where even today we know relatively little about him, and what we do know tends to come from apologists for Cuba, because they're the only people that Castro will let anywhere near his archives, if you like.
Didn't his brother celebrate Hanukkah with the Cuban Jews a couple of years ago and wear a yarmulke and everything?
Yes, Raul did.
Yes.
What would be interesting to see would be the color of the yarmulke he was wearing. Because if he was wearing, a black yarmulke, that's just kind of a guest yarmulke. It doesn't mean he's considered to be Jewish. But if he was wearing a colored version, that would mean he more than likely is recognized as such and is recognizing himself to be such. Interestingly, Raoul is the hardline communist of the two. He's the one who basically goes around executing people, would be his basic modus operandi, and it always has been. To give you some idea of the power of the Castro family at this time in Cuba, when Castro was at university, to the University of Havana, he was basically a playboy, and he had a $10,000 a year allowance. Now, that's without any sort of accommodation or even a car, because his father gave him a new American car. And that's the equivalent of a university student in the U.S. being given $1 million a year just told, okay, go out and spend it. Because it's that sort of scale. And Castro then began to use his thousands of dollars to basically buy his way into political power progressively, and as part of the opposition. To the extent we're in the night.
Yeah, and that is certainly a Jewish tactic.
Oh, yes, it's a very, very common one. They sort of tend to buy their way in rather than earn their way in, if you like. Another weird little anecdote that your listeners may not be aware of is that Castro himself wrote to FDR on November the 6th, 1940, in rather bad English when he was 12, of all things, basically demanding money from the US. I mean, it's something they found about 20 years ago or so. They found this letter from a very youthful Fidel Castro to FDR demanding money for no apparent reason other than he was Fidel Castro. It's kind of that sort of weird chutzpah sort of vibe to it.
Now, didn't Netanyahu say that Fidel Castro has a deep understanding of Jewish history, and didn't Castro say that Israel has a right to exist? I mean, he's pretty pro-Israel.
He is, yes, because, I mean that would explain why, because why else would Fidel Castro be pro-Israel? Because of the fact that in the Marxist view of the world, the Jews, and the Israelis certainly, are the ones who are the problem. In that they are an imperialist nation and so on and so forth. So it's kind of odd for a communist to do an about-face and say, instead of the Palestinians being the good guys, it's the Jews and the Israelis who are the good guys.
Yes.
So it's a kind of unusual situation to be in for a sort of Marxist point of view. Interestingly, now you mention it, in the entire Holocaust issue, Fidel Castro has repeatedly, as you say, expressed a deep sorrow about the Holocaust, as he says. He talked about it in 1950. In the 1950s, he used to talk about it quite a lot. We have diaries from those who knew him at the time. And again, you do get that kind of vibe of interest in the Holocaust well out of proportion to his supposed Gentile nature. And if you take into account that one of Castro's closest confidants over the years was a Jew called, a Polish Jew no less, called Enrique Olzacki. He was basically a very high-ranking commander in the 26th of July movement, which is Fidel Castro's original political movement. He was the man who Fidel Castro turned to bring his movement into the province of Camigui, which is to the north of where Fidel Castro was in the Sierra Maestra. Because if you know Cuban geography, there's a bottleneck in Cuba, and that is Camigui. So he had to go. He had to send his best man there, and he did. And his name, and he was a Polish Jew, Enrique Olzacki.
So very interesting. All right, we do have to take a 3-minute break for our commercial messages, and we'll be right back in 3 minutes.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Herbal Healer Academy's new summer specials. Our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale. Organic liquid iodine, liquid cal, Meg, vitamin D, CoQ10 with Hawthorne, colon enhancer, Super 2, natural laxative, our exceptional product, Connexin, memory power, and Super Male and Femplex. All on sale for the summer at herbalhealer.com. Also, 10% off on the HHA Survival Course. This is an important time to have this information. Might save your life. Nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education. herbalhealer.com. Free online newsletter. Quality natural medicine supplier since 1988. We ship the same day you place your order. Free 128-page catalog with your first order. Go to herbalhealer.com today. herbalhealer.com.
Warning for all Gulf Coast disaster survivors. Be aware that dangerous gases are in the air you breathe. Benzene, hydrogen sulfide, methylene chloride, and Corexit 9500. Keep your body clean with micro plant powder. For all Gulf Coast residents and all who want to be healthy, hempusa.org brings you a new formulation of micro plant powder with lactobacillus acidophilus, rebuilding your immune system while detoxing the rest of your body, pulling out positive toxins, heavy metals, viruses, fungus, bacteria, and parasites. Cleans and purifies the blood, lungs, stomach, and colon. Micro plant powder will help eliminate these dangerous chemicals from the body used in the Gulf cleanup. At hempusa.org, we want you to try our number one selling detox product, micro plant powder. Call and order at 1-908-691-2608. 1-908-691-2608. Or visit us at hempusa.org today.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Carl Rattle, and he's the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com, and I recommend that you go there and read some of his writings. Very fascinating. And this whole idea of Castro being Jewish, puts kind of a different, gives us a different perspective of, like the assassination of Kennedy. That makes a big difference in my mind. I mean, it confirms a lot of things in my mind, but it's interesting. And, the fact that we've always been told that, that Cuba was a communist threat, it's just very interesting.
I was going to say, just the fact that, the whole Kennedy thing is something I'm going to touch on a bit later. But it's interesting that, just to explain, it's like the people who were forming the opinion in the United States at this time, in the late 1950s to the 1960s, were outright Castro partisans. And yes, there was some, blundering on the CIA's part, but a lot of their, a lot of the problem that the Kennedy administration faced Cuba was created largely by the Jewish media who basically supported Castro for quite a bit since he became known to the world because it's not what it's somewhat known. If you read a biography of Castro, you know that in 1957, when Castro landed in the boat, the Granma, which, by the way, should be pronounced in the English term because it's actually an English word. It's later is all grandma is grandmother. So that's all it means, because he bought it off an American dentist. It wouldn't, and he called it after his grandmother, whatever reason. Then this, shall we say, Castro had been attacked by an aircraft, and about 2/3 of his comrades were killed in this air raid, and the Batista government had announced that he was dead. And it was only through Herbert L. Matthews, who, by the way, was Jewish, that the world became knew again that Fidel was alive. Because at this point, Batista had, I think he'd scrambled basically every person he could to look for Fidel Castro to kill him, because he was perceived to be a threat. And if the world found out that he was still alive, that he was scared of what would happen in terms of his diplomatic situation and the support for Castro, you know, around the world. And that's basically what happened, because Matthews was one of the best, one of the best known writers of the 1950s and 60s. He was a prominent journalist with the New York Times. He wrote an awful lot of leaders and so on and so forth. I mean, if you look at a newspaper at this time, you will often see a Herbert L. Matthews article. And as I said, he came from a secular Jewish family. It isn't well known, but Anthony De Palma, who has written a recent biography of Herbert L. Matthews, has pointed out that he was in fact Jewish. The interesting thing is that he visited Castro himself in the Sierra Maestra in the late 1950s. And to be precise, I think it was 1958 he visited him. After this, he began publishing numerous photos, opinion pieces about Castro, where he described him as an agrarian reformer, this you know, this figure who was a democrat, who was struggling against a brutal dictatorship, you know, and which pretended to be anti-communist but really wasn't, because it was an alliance with the official Cuban Communist Party, and so on and so forth, to the point where even after Castro had become come out as a communist in 1962, 1963, Matthews continued to argue that Castro was in fact still an agrarian reformer, and the only reason he'd become a communist was because of the US's treatment of him, which throws an entirely different light upon Cuban-American relations at this time, in that if that is the case, which I don't think it is, but there we go, then it would suggest that Castro was a nationalist, not a communist when he started out, and that he only adopted communism because of the fact that the Americans rejected him. That said, there is a point against that, in terms of that we know from Che Guevara and Hilda Gadea, who was Che Guevara's first wife, both of whom knew Castro quite well. That Castro was in, during his time in Mexico, when he was locked up for trying to start revolutions there, he had been reading Marx and had described himself as a Marxist. And we also know, for example, that Castro, the branch of communism that Castro sort of leaned towards was Trotskyism, of all things. He was not a Stalinist, he was not a Maoist. He was a very unique form of Trotskyist, if you like, and he attracted an awful lot of Trotskyites in the early 1960s and 70s, and still to this day, they lionize him as a sort of Trotskyite leader.
Now, when he came to power, didn't, you know, it's my understanding that he threw out the gangsters, you know, the people who had set up gambling in Cuba. And that when he came to power, he kicked them out.
I wouldn't say he kicked them out. It's a bit more complicated than that, than the idea that he likes to propound about him cleaning up Cuba. Because what effectively happened is he came to power in 1959, but through 1959 to about 1962, 1963, he was consolidating power. He was having to play ball, if you like, with an awful lot of different factions. And even in 1960, for example, he actually started persecuting communists and socialists with his own police, because he didn't want to be viewed as a communist. In fact, he accused via Matthews people who call him a communist of seeing a red under every bed. And in fact, they were seeing a red, which just kind of makes fun of the entire skeptic logic that, the over-exaggeration and all that you get, that you see from time to time. But yes, just over time, the Jews began to leave in terms of the casino owners and so forth, because he began to slowly clamp down on, parts of Cuban life. And to the point where in the 1970s and 1980s, there was no private enterprise in Cuba whatsoever, and that it was a cardinal offence, and you could be thrown into effectively a gulag for more or less opening a lemonade stand or having a restaurant in your home. He's only since the 1990s had to reintroduce capitalism in Cuba in a partial way, and that has been fed by the American tourist industry in Cuba, and particularly among sort of Jews going there and wanting commercial opportunities. I mean, if you go to Cuba, you will find an awful lot of Jews going there to sort of to go to see prostitutes and what have you, because that's one of the places they can go, and there'll be no questions asked, and they can take off their yarmulkes, in sort of metaphorically, and do what they like without their wives knowing. Interestingly enough, rather
so
strange.
His if he did throw them out, it certainly wasn't for a very long time. Maybe he just sort of rearranged, business. Down there, about who could engage in business.
Yeah, and I mentioned Enrique Olzaki before. He's the Ashkenazi Jew and one of Castro's confidants. He was the man who basically reformed the Cuban economy to go away from this model of Jewish gangsterism. To the point of he basically created the Stalinist state, and he was trying to have a great leap forward and have all this industry be created. And if the fact didn't work, and the Cuban economy has monumentally failed, is neither here nor there in sort of retrospect. But it's just the fact that you have that situation where Jews were taking advantage of the Cuban people, and now all of a sudden you've got a situation where Jewish revolutionaries have kicked out the Jews and have just reinstalled themselves as a layer on top of the revolutionary government. And this is particularly interesting because Castro, not well known, but he has a habit of killing off his enemies, of his popular enemies. For example, he may or may not have arranged the killing of one of his peasant leaders called Camilo Cienfuegos in 1959, when he died of, in quotes, an aircraft accident, when he was a rapidly very popular figure. Olzaki probably was responsible for getting rid of Che Guevara, because a lot of other members of the Cuban sort of Central Committee, who all went with Che Guevara to Bolivia to try and start a revolution there and failed, and were, of course, killed. But this progressive kicking out of anyone who could be a threat to Castro over time, and then sort of completely rearranging of society to benefit a Castro vision of the world. It's quite interesting. And the fact that Olzaki, to this day, is still a minister in Cuba. He's the vice minister of fishing, of all things. It's kind of a semi-retirement, but he held an awful lot of different posts in the Interior Ministry and in the Cuban economics guru, and a lot of his ideas have historically been attributed to Che Guevara, when in fact it was Olzaki who had an awful lot of these decentralized ideas that Che Guevara is claimed by Helen Yaff, who's Jewish and a major apologist for Castro, to be the origin of these.
Now, there's quite a community of anti-Castro Cubans in Florida who are just definitely against him.
Yeah.
What do you know about that group?
Well, the anti-communist Cubans are, well, I think it's kind of become an institution for them. They're anti-communist because they feel they're supposed to be anti-communist, and they have this idea of Cuba that there was this perfect Cuba way back before Castro and before Batista. That's complete nonsense. The Cuba before Castro was an awful place in many respects, and it has stayed an awful place. Insofar as it's a place where you have a very, very huge, you have a huge divide between the rich and the poor. You had people who used to survive on, sucking the juice out of sugarcane and that kind of thing before Castro. And after Castro, all you have now are people who cannot afford to feed their children. On the wages they get from the state because of the fact that the amount of food that they get is tiny. So, for example, they're supposed to get, a pound of coffee, this, that, and the other. But in reality, they say they get some fish so 1 month, they get some coffee another month. The next month, they don't get anything. Sort of 5 months down the line, they get a bunch of bananas or something, that kind of thing. It's very erratic and no Cuban has really benefited from the Castro revolution, apart from the elite who have sort of become a sort of technocratic class, who just sort of rule rule Cuba in Castro's name, and Castro sort of makes a big noise and, generally speaking, says an awful lot of things, but doesn't actually seem to do a whole lot other than that. Raul seems to be the power behind the throne in many respects, because he is the founder of the Ministry of the Interior, who run their version of the NKVD, have their own army units, the secret police, the block committees, which are the local party areas who inform on everyone else and so on and so forth. So effectively, you've got a Jew controlling the economy, a Jew as the president, and a Jew as the person who's in control of the security system. It's kind of you're screwed either way. You can't really get out of that.
Yes. And it's interesting didn't the Cubans used to be against Israel until maybe just in the last, 15 years?
Yes and no. They were against Israel because of the fact that because they had to be against Israel, because that was official Soviet Union, Chinese, and world communist policy. And it would be very, very hard for Castro and the Cuban Communist Party to actually say, oh no, we dissent from this, because in any Marxist analysis, in spite of how flexible Marxism can be, as a ideology for justifying things, you cannot justify what the Israelis have done to the Palestinians from a Marxist point of view, because it is what you'd call blatant imperialism and capitalist exploitation in Marxist parlance, and you'd have to support Palestinians. But without the Soviet Union, with China having it in quotes communism with Chinese characteristics, aka capitalist communism, you've had a breakup of the old communist power structure and sort of the party lines, because there are very few communist states left, this means that Castro can actually come out and say what he thinks, rather than having to toe a line against the West. Because bear in mind that Castro's economy until the 90s and so forth was basically propped up by the Soviet Union to the tune of something like $19 billion a year or something. It's a bit like Kim Jong Il in North Korea, and they had no say, and all of a sudden they've got a say, and now we are beginning to hear what they really think about matters rather than what they are told to do, because of the fact if they don't, they will get their aid cut off.
Interesting. Okay, we know that that Kennedy was, of course, against Israel. And yes. So, You know, if Castro was secretly in favor of Israel, that would present an interesting situation. And there's always been a lot of speculation about Castro and his involvement in Kennedy's assassination.
It's quite possible. As to what I'm not massively well read on the whole issue of Kennedy's assassination. However, we know Cuba had a very large espionage service.
Okay, Carl, we do have to go to a 3-minute break. We will be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Hey, honey, I'm home. I grabbed a newspaper on the way home. Look at all the news today.
Don't you know that all you're going to get in the newspaper is propaganda, twisted news, and false information?
Honey, this is a national newspaper. It has to be true.
Ha! For some reason, the majority of the population believe anything the mainstream media tells them. The newspaper doesn't give out the important attention of what's happening to this country and news that affects our daily lives. Say, does that newspaper mention anything about the North American Union?
No, not that I can see.
I didn't think so. You need to go to www.newswithviews.com, where truth is more important than political correctness. That's www.newswithviews.com. Hey, don't throw that away. We can use that in the birdcage.
Okay, move over. Let me start reading newswithviews.com.
The truth? Read all about it at newswithviews.com. Newswithviews.com, where reality shatters illusion.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcasts, as well as a contest corner where we'll raffle different prizes to our listeners. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
Welcome back. Our guest today is Carl Rattle. He's the author of Communism and the Jews, a source reader. His website is SemiticController.blogspot.com. Didn't the CIA, in collaboration with organized crime, attempt to kill Fidel Castro? Didn't they get together a rifle team that would be able to have sufficient skill to do this?
Yes, because the CIA came up with all sorts of weird ideas for killing Fidel Castro, most famously a exploding cigar, of all things. Another one was poisoning his wetsuit, and so on and so forth. You had the CIA in the early 1960s were coming up with different ways to kill Castro. They were sending rifles to people to Cubans living in Cuba who were against Castro to go and kill Castro. One such attempt almost succeeded. The only reason it didn't succeed in the end was because the rifleman got cold feet and then went on the run, allowing the Minister of the Interior to get hold of him and stop him. The mention of the CIA is quite interesting in that the CIA, as you know, with Kennedy's blessing, created the had the Bay of Pigs incident. Now there is a kind of an unsung chapter to this, which is again involves Herbert L. Matthews. Because Herbert L. Matthews worked out that a major CIA offensive was in the offing, and of course he questioned some Cubans, and he'd found out that a lot of people in the Cuban community were going missing. And basically everyone knew someone who disappeared for some special hush-hush work, if you like. And he then published a story in the New York Times, of all things, basically saying there's a massive CIA offensive in the offing just days before the Bay of Pigs invasion was due to begin, which created a situation where Herbert L. Matthews had just told Castro, oh, you're going to be invaded. You'd be prepared in the next couple of days to have an invasion hit you, pretty much, of Cuban exiles. This allowed Castro to retrofit his only two jet planes, which were training aircraft, with guns. So he managed to have a couple of days to put some time on to put some guns on these and to be able to use them in fighting off the Cuban exile air force that the US had put together. And also the fact that he had, Matthews had exposed this CIA coup before it happened allowed huge amounts of pressure to be brought from the left on Kennedy to rein the CIA in, and that actually impacted because the Cubans were denied air cover by the US. All of a sudden they'd been told by the CIA they would receive American air cover. They in fact received two sorties, very very brief sorties, by American aircraft, but that was it, and they were sort of just left to die in it was called a 2508 brigade, so and so forth.
Okay, interesting. We do have a 60-second break. We will be back after a station ID, so stay tuned.